Welcome to another episode of Training Talk. Max, thanks for joining. This is our first Training Talk in person, sitting a meter apart. How you doing?
All right. A little slow to wake up. I had such a great sleep last night, thanks to performance. We both took it last night.
We did.
Yeah.
And you were sharing with me this morning your information from your watch. What did you find?
Oh, I just wake up, check my heart rate graph on my Garmin, and just see trend of heart rate slowly going down over the course of the time I was asleep before it drops down to 40 about right before I woke up. So coming off of a busy 3 days of training, Tuesday through Thursday block for rest day today. So really pleased with how recovery is moving. I'm on a bit of a new training program right now with some more details to follow. But one of the things that we're doing right now, actually pretty opposite of what Matt's doing, his training. I'm doing a lot of volume with minimal intensity. And I think that can also just speak to the real variability of training and how that there is no one size fits all plan. As much as I believe in what Matt and I are doing for Matt, every athlete has different goals and different sort of training circumstances.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Exciting stuff. Once again, huge thank you to Pillar Performance for sponsoring the Training Talk series through the first half of this year. We've both been taking Pillar. I've been taking Pillar Performance Triple Magnesium for a year and a half. Max has recently gotten involved. Improving sleep quality is just one of a few benefits that we've found. So thank you to Pillar Performance for sponsoring this episode as well. To score 15% off first order, you can use SWEAT15 as the code directly at Pillar Performance or at Feed if you are in the US. So once again, that's code SWEAT15, SWEAT15 for 15% off your first order at Pillar Performance. And if you're in the US, at the Feed. But Max, plenty to talk about today. We've got an interesting test lined up at the end of the week. But last week, we recapped the week that was the week that I took a bit of stress leave, took 5 days off, basically returned back doing a 6 by 1200 meter threshold workout and then the sprints. This week that we're speaking to now included a race, the Shamrock Shuffle.
I do just want to ask you, just for the purpose of the listeners, last week we spent a while talking about how time off really, it's really tough for time off to actually lead to acute losses in fitness. And you took a bunch of time off, and I know what the answer is, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Did you feel any worse? Do you feel like you lost any fitness?
Well, that's the short answer. The long answer is the workout that I did just a couple of days ago that we'll talk about as well was, I would say it's a workout, is probably one of the best workouts I've done in a very long time. So
considering the circumstances, 100%. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So we'll get to that in a minute.
Race didn't go too badly either.
The race went okay.
So good effort.
Yeah. So it was on Sunday, 24th of March, Shamrock Shuffle 8K in Chicago. Huge race. I was hearing numbers like 30,000 people. I'm not sure if there was that many people, but
judging by the number of the photos that you posted, you're running with guys who are running 25 flat, 25 low for 8K, and there's still a sea of you. I think that really speaks to, evidently, the depth of the running community at this, your new adopted hometown of Chicago. Seems like there are really a lot of guys and girls just chasing it. 25 flat. I had an athlete run 8K 2 weeks ago, and he ran 25 low, and it was just him and three or four other guys. Whereas you're surrounded by post-collegiate runners, more elite end of hobbyists. Yeah, I mean, it's awesome that there's the depth there. Not quite like Japan, where you can run 66 minutes for a half marathon and get 100th.
100th? I was 200.
Jeez. Yeah, so not quite Japan, but still, like, really cool to see the depth that came out in Chicago last weekend.
Yeah. I think I was in the 70s. I think I was maybe 77th or something about that. 25.05 was my time. So for reference, I know 8K is a bit of an odd distance. It's very close to 5 miles, just shy. It's on pace for running about 31.20 something.
It's 3.7
per K, I think, or 3.06.
It's a little less. It's about 3.06.
My GPS showed 2.59, but my GPS was completely off. I think my first kilometer showed 2.27, which is on pace to run by far the world record, 10K.
Yeah, so
that wasn't right.
I heard from some people at this race that apparently because the race, you guys ran underground or under a tunnel for a little bit, right?
Yeah, but that's the same start as the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah, Chicago Marathon also has notorious GPS issues.
Yeah.
And I think that's because not only are you running underground, but the GPS signal in amid lots of high-rise buildings gets completely thrown. We think about what GPS was developed for. It was developed by the U.S. military for use in remote situations where you don't have satellite cell service or anything like that. So it's not actually designed to really work in super congested areas where there's lots of tall objects for it to bounce off of. But yeah, I think that what this just speaks to, and we can chat about this for a couple minutes if you want to, is the importance of running on feel and the importance of, I think one of the best ways to do that ultimately is to focus on racing, right? Race to the people around you. And when your watch is giving you unreliable or bad data, it's just further, I think that's another indication that you shouldn't really be racing off of the watch. Even in the marathon, when it may seem really important to stick to established paces that you figured out that you can hold, or you have a significant degree of faith you can hold. One thing that I believe is I think that until you've done several marathon buildups of at a very similar fitness level, you don't really know what to expect from marathon pace. But even once you do know what to expect from marathon pace, you still should be racing it on feel as much as possible, just trying to control your effort. You probably weren't running 220 a K, but even if you were, it's just all on feel, right? And it's about, I'm going out here for roughly a 25 minute effort. I want to try and get to the finish line with the fuel tank on empty at about 25 minutes. And how do I meter my effort out over the course of the race to get there, right? So just again, underlies the importance of not racing to the watch, not even really, we've talked about not even really training to the watch. And the only thing you can control is your effort.
You did advise me before the race to run by feel, which is what I did. And so to preface too, this is going to sound like an excuse because I made the same excuses last week. The move to Chicago has been slow in a sense of we've moved apartments twice. We moved to one place that was a little bit too small. Then we shifted apartments in the same building. That's a whole other story, but that's not what this podcast is about. But I went into this race basically still not really in a good headspace to race. I'm still dealing with a lot of administration stuff for the visa, a lot of not meetings with programmers at night in India. We're almost over that hump, but I actually went into this race quite sleep deprived and quite tired.
Tell the listeners what you told me about what you were thinking the morning of the race.
I was actually thinking about not going.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I don't know about people listening or you, Max. When I start to sleep poorly, it's almost like I have a hard time getting back to sleeping well. It's almost like my body is then used to sleeping poorly and I just start sleeping. I don't have any form of insomnia. I never have, but it's just like I keep waking up after 3 hours and then not getting back to sleep for a while. Whereas if I get back into a routine of just sleeping 8 straight and get 3 in a row, then I can continue doing that.
Yeah. I don't think that really happens to me too much. From just talking to other people, I think that I'm fortunate that I'm pretty good at sleeping. We'll say, so one completely interesting, almost completely unrelated anecdote is in 2020, when I was in the best shape of my life, I was training 20 hours a week, every week on the bike. Every single night, this was just this weird indicator of the form that I was in. I'd wake up to pee between about 1 and 4 a.m. And it was just for some reason when I was in that good of shape, I guess I was just drinking so much fluid I have no idea. But I just remember like when I was the leanest and the fittest I'd ever been, I could not sleep through the night without getting up to pee. It's just complete random anecdote. But that I've always looked back on that. I'm like, I can't be that fit yet because I'm not waking up to pee in the middle of the night.
That's when you know you're ready to race. It was definitely a bit of that as well. But I went down. I just thought, I'm going to go down. I got the entry. I'm in the elite field. I went down to race it. And to be honest, when I finished it, I was on the start line just thinking, just whatever happens here happens. I'll give it a hard out effort. Probably go about 95%. You said it's a zone 5 workout.
Yep.
And just hammer it and just do it hard. Maybe don't go to the well, but just run it really hard. 25:05. Honestly, I think that if I did it again in a month, I'd probably take off 45 seconds, just purely being in a better headspace and more relaxed and more calm and having slept more.
Yeah.
So having a week, I don't know, I'm doing a little bit of a piss take to mileage junkies. I've been doing probably 40, 45 miles a week and feel like I could probably run close to 10K PB over the last 12 weeks. I don't know.
10K? I think you could probably run pretty close to half PB, to be honest. We've talked about this as well. Excuse me, the sensations that you had running that half marathon in Texas with Luke, we've talked about, all right, we take the humidity out and we try and really go for it. Just everything that you had that morning, not even really changing fitness, prep, anything. really just taking the humidity out, but then putting you on a path to really chase time. You're like, I think I could have gotten pretty close to what I ran in Japan in December. And I think that, yeah, going from the half to the full, really going for full, really chasing a PB. I think that Matt and I have discussed, Matt's put on his story, like, I'm running Boston in a few weeks, haven't done any sort of really any runs over 20K, really not that many over 15K, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, do I need it? To run 235, no, I don't think you do. But we've also talked, the night that you got here, talked about what you would need from a few weeks of training in order to convert that into full marathon fitness. And that actually leads me to share, we had a quote from you two nights ago. Matt's been staying with me at my house in Boulder. I've had tons of great conversations about training, about racing, just about the sport and some really cool stuff that's going on with Sweat Elite that we're continuing to roll out in the next few months. But I'm just going to share the listeners this quote that you gave.
You wrote it down?
Oh, I did. Because we talked about it. We were like, this is brilliant.
I think I remember you writing it down.
I wrote it down and we were talking with my roommate, Evan Miner, who's also running the Chicago Marathon, also running, going for about 215, 216 in the fall. And Matt, you were asking him about like, when is he going to switch to full marathon training? He was asking us the same question. And you gave a quote that I think, and Evan was surprised when I said to answer for you, that I think we're really going to move into marathon training no more than about 6-8 weeks out from the marathon. And for a Western athlete, that seems pretty like Evan. And you and I are Western athletes as well, but you spent a lot of time in Kenya, seeing the way the Kenyans prep for marathon, Ethiopians as well. For a Western athlete like Evan, it seems weird that you're only going to go into marathon prep within 2 months of your marathon. But that's very normal in Kenya and Ethiopia, where they just have a high base of fitness and they keep that rolling through the year. And they really have a pretty short specific period before the marathon, for about 6 weeks, give or take 10 days, 2 weeks to taper before they race. And the quote that you said was, and I cannot agree more with this wholeheartedly, if you've done 4+ marathon builds and then you get in over the course of your career and you get into killer 5K shape, it should only take about 6 weeks of marathon specific training to get into baller marathon fitness before about a 2-week taper.
Yeah.
Eight weeks out, it really only takes 8 weeks of intent for the marathons to convert into really good fitness. And I think that you hit the nail on the head completely. I think that Western athletes conceptualize marathon builds. They think that the whole year needs to be a marathon build. And I've fallen into this trap with some athletes before. Fall marathon approach, the whole summer is an over distance, easy volume block, then get into late summer, early fall as marathon training. And I think that if we just focus on trying to give ourselves targets and marks to hit through the year, and regardless of mileage or marathon specificity in training, if you're just keeping the ball rolling and keeping a high level of fitness through the year, it doesn't take much to actually convert whatever fitness you have, whether it's 5K, 8K, 10K, 1500, whatever, into marathon fitness. But again, this is under the caveat of you've already had plenty of marathon builds in your career up to this point. But yeah, with that caveat, I think it really just doesn't take much.
Yeah, I think it's really important to underscore the fact that I said 4 marathon builds.
4+.
4+, yeah. It's one of those things, like, I'll reverse engineer this a bit. It's like when people ask, well, how long is your marathon specific block going to be and how long should it be to someone else? I mean, it's almost, that's not the right question. But it is the right question. Yeah. But there's so many nuances to it.
Exactly.
You have to understand it. You have to understand the person's lifetime mileage. You have to understand what the person's done in the 3 to 6 to 12 months before that.
Exactly.
And for me, having done between September and December last year, something like 10 runs over 40K, including races.
Yeah.
That's not disappearing quickly.
No, it's not. Not at all.
I think it's March. It's almost April. And I can still feel that's, of course, it's not like I'm still not at the same marathon shape. But I have told Wayne before, and I'm going to put this publicly, that I think that if I did a marathon now, I could run 225.
Oh, come on. But you said...
Did I say faster?
You said faster if we gave you 4 weeks. You said if you give me 4 weeks from now, you said 221.
Oh, I said after 4 weeks, I could run 221.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah. I think I could run 225 this week.
4 weeks, 225 this weekend and 4 weeks of Stanley Fitness from now. 221, yeah.
With that said, may have a pretty, I think my...
You have a unique advantage to this.
That's not wrong. What I was going to say, though, is people might be questioning that prediction of running 225. And I would agree with that because the muscular cramping may be more problematic because I haven't done a lot of long runs. So maybe 225 may be challenging. I'm just saying that if you did a test
on aerobic fitness, the aerobic fitness needed to run, but 221, 225. But we've talked about this as well. We've talked about how if you look at an equivalent performance chart for any given marathon time, whether it's 216, 221, or 226, right? Any sort of thing in that 215 to 225 range, really. And we look at the equivalent performances underneath the marathon, starting at 5K. For you, the cramping piece, which is how this entire plan really started, is an important piece. But I think that you are an athlete where if you hit the 5K mark or the 10K mark associated with the longer performance, then you are in shape to run the longer performance. You have such a base of strength that I think that if we can corner the speedier side of what constitutes that fitness, right, then I think that we have faith that the strength side is completely taken care of. And it's not, I think we can expand back from just September to December when you were in Japan. I think that the longer, and I'm not entirely advocating for every sort of athlete to take this approach, but you don't just have a 3-month base of lots of 40K runs from 6-8 months ago. It's a 6-7 year base, right? And it's not just you have a long history of training at an elite or sub-elite level, and you have lots of 40K runs banked, but it's the last 6 years that has given you the freedom to make these projections with a high degree of confidence, right? Whereas for other athletes who simply just haven't run that many miles, it's a little bit more of a crapshoot in predicting marathon potential off of half marathon and 10K fitness. But that said, I think that we have both, for all of the good things that this 6 years of base of marathon training, it's going on 7 or 8 now?
How many years?
Of marathon training?
This would be the 7th, I think.
7th, yeah. I think I still don't necessarily want to recommend that everyone just loads themselves up with mileage for 6 or 7 years. Part of what makes elite talent is not raw aerobic ability or raw physiology. It's the ability to withstand mileage, right? So you're already incomplete, not even regarding your talent, right? An aspect of what makes you fit for the marathon is your ability to stay consistent with this mileage over many years without getting hurt. And I think for other athletes, I want to definitely caution against just attempting that for the sake of attempting it, because you could have really no idea what your body's actually going to do when you get into that. And Matt, you do, right? So just wanted to add a little caveat there.
Yeah, very well put. Anything more to talk about with the Shamrock? So 25.05. Yeah, like I said, I was happy with the result. Didn't really mind about the result. I was just like, it's a hard effort. It's a race. It's meet some people. Yeah, it's not really a benchmark, really, even, because I remember cooling down thinking, I'm still haven't moved to Chicago properly. Like, I'm still in the process of moving and doing the beta thing. And it's very stressful. And we're launching a whole lot of things on the website, and we've hired a CEO and all these things. So I was like, yeah, if I can run pretty close to my 10K PB pace for 8K, only 20, 30 seconds off it, then great. That was last Sunday.
Yeah. I think it's a great way to approach a training race as well.
Oh, yeah.
Where the mindset's kind of, it wasn't great or terrible. It was just a good effort in training.
And the days leading in, you told me to just do that. That's what I did. And onto the following day, 2 days later, flew to Boulder after obviously a couple of easy runs, zone 2, zone 1. Which is what we're always doing in between the harder workouts.
Preach it.
I got to your place. We thought we had a couple of ideas in mind for the week of training, but then Mr. Butterfield, Dallas Butterfield,
the one and the only.
Most of you listening to this are runners, so they may or may not know Tyler Butterfield, but he's been a friend of mine for 20 years. Actually, went to the same high school as me. Professional Ironman,
second fastest full length Ironman time in the history of the sport. Yeah. And he's also 2-time Olympian triathlon, Bermuda national record holder in the marathon, 2:15 marathoner. And now he lives in Boulder. I guess They have three kids.
Yeah.
Dedicated family man. Now he's coach of some triathletes, but this man stays in fantastic shape. He, last fall, I think he was getting ready for, he was going to run the Valencia Marathon. His marathon training was, he'd run about 30 miles a week, but he'd run like an 8 mile run and like a 22 mile run. And that was his training, like every week. Should I share the listeners what he did in 2012?
Yeah.
Okay. So Matt said, I was telling Matt this story yesterday. And Matt said, he was like, if you didn't tell me who this was, I still would have guessed that it could have only been Tyler. So Tyler told me that in preparation for the London 2012 Olympics, he, every week he'd run a 29 flat 10K on the Alter G at 75% body weight just to get used to running 29 minutes for 10K and to do it every week. That was his training. He's just bouncing around at what, like 254 pace every week. What a guy, man. What a guy. Phenomenal athlete. He's older than you, right? Isn't he?
Yeah, he's three. When I was in year 8 at school, he was the captain of track and field, and he was in year 12, so he must be 4.
So he's 40?
Yeah, he must be 40, 40
41. 41?
Yeah.
He's still in fantastic shape. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So he ran Fukuoka Marathon with me last year. And when I ran 222, he was 224, I think, or 223 even.
Yeah.
He was about a minute or two back.
And he's run under 220 a couple times in the last few years as well.
I think so.
Because his 215 PB is from a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason why we brought him up. I shot Tyler a message on the way to Boulder, literally on the plane. He replies back going, tomorrow morning, Rudy Von Berg, professional Ironman triathlete, one of the best in the world.
Third. Rudy got third at the Ironman World Championships in Nice last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tyler and Rudy, I'd never met Rudy, but I'd listened to him on a few podcasts before. They were doing a workout the following day at Niwot Track in Boulder of 8x2K for Rudy as he prepares for his next race, an Ironman event, I believe. And Tyler was going to join him.
I think he's going to Singapore.
Oh, is it Singapore?
Yeah, it's T100 number right. 2 in Singapore.
Yeah. And so I told you that this is going on tomorrow morning and you were like, perfect. That's great. Obviously, I wanted to catch up with Tyler anyway.
Yeah.
We had planned to do a Zone 4 workout this week. So I joined in, went down to the track, 18 hours after landing at altitude? Although with that said, Boulder's not super high. It's 5,300 feet. So 1,600 meters.
1,700 meters. So generally people say that altitude starts at about 3,000 feet or about 900,000 meters. So when you think about the difference in height between a place like Flagstaff, Arizona, which is about 7,000 or 7,500?
I think it's about 7,000 feet.
7,000 feet. Flagstaff is not 2/7 higher than Boulder. It's actually about, quote, twice as high because sea level doesn't really end until you get to about 900 meters. There is not the curve of oxygen saturation is more inverse, or actually, sorry, I don't mean inverse, the opposite of inverse, the inverse of inverse, logarithmic or exponential. It's a little too early in the morning, too early in the morning for me for math, but yeah, it is my job to know about that shit. So yeah, but whatever. Point is that oxygen saturation doesn't really change much from zero until you get above 3,000 feet, right? So Boulder is about half as effectively high as Flagstaff. You're only really at about 2,000 feet of true altitude above what's effectively sea level. Yeah, 5,300 feet, 1,650 meters. You're definitely going to feel it, right? And I will say, one of the things about Boulder, it's a little bit opposite sort of Flagstaff, where in Flagstaff, you're living high and you can train low down in Sedona or Phoenix if you're willing to drive an hour or two down from Phoenix. With Boulder, you're situated at about 5,000, 5,500 feet, depending on where you're living. And you can go up and you can train in the mountains. The one thing about it, though, is you can't really go super low. But it's a good middle ground. For middle distance runners, sometimes they struggle to train at altitude because you can't get the absolutely full-on muscular recruitment that you can at sea level. And in fact, some of your fast-twitch fibers atrophy a little bit based on the new metabolic and oxygen demands of being at altitude. So they don't really recommend 800-meter runners live at altitude. For 1,500-meter runners, I think that direction of the sport, now that the 1500 is becoming more of a time trial and less of a sort of tactical blast the last 400, I think it's making more sense for the 1500 meter runners like Yard and Goose, Ollie Hoare to live up here But yeah, I lost where I was going with that. But
the effect of altitude on me.
Effect of altitude on you. Sorry. As Matt can attest to. I've been awake for a couple hours, but that pillar performance, man.
Beautiful.
The costs of better recovery as a sluggish mind. But I also haven't started training yet today, and Matt's already gone for a run, so he's a little sharper than I am. Yeah, you're definitely going to feel it, for sure. But I will say, something that I want to toss out to the listeners is, if anyone has a race or an event at altitude, regardless of what the altitude is, you might think, all right, if I have a job, I'm not a professional athlete, I can't get there 2 or 3 weeks out. But you're like, I might want to try and give myself 4 or 5 days to try and get as used to it as I can before my event. That is not what you want to do. So generally, if you can't arrive 10 days or more out from your event and you're racing at altitude, you want to try and get there as close to the event as possible. Because the idea is that you want to shock the body. Altitude gets worse before the body's effect. So the effect of altitude on the body gets worse before it gets better. So if you've been at altitude for a day or two, it's going to start to get way worse for days 3, all the way sometimes through 7. When I actually moved to altitude, I was overtrained at the time that I moved here and overfatigued, underweight. And it took me about 3 months to acclimate. Now that's a very long time, but still, for people who are really looking to train here seriously or move here, you need about 6 weeks. But in terms of racing, I think, yeah, if you can't get here 10 days or more from the time of your event, it's best just shock the body, try and arrive straight away and just go right into the effort. Because otherwise, what you're doing is you're not really giving the body time to freak out to the lack of oxygen. It just has to go, right? But if you give the body a little bit of time to adjust to it, it's going to get way worse. You're just going to feel absolutely fucking fried. There's a recovery component to this as well, which is that if you've been sleeping at sea level, if you're not acclimated to altitude, and you've been sleeping at sea level prior to your race, remember that your sleep during the acclimation period at altitude is going to be terrible sleep quality because there's just so much to recover from, and you're not going to get as much out of your sleep as you normally are. So if you spend your last 3 sleeps before an event at altitude, sleeping at altitude, you're just going to be fried, even if you aren't training very hard, just from the poor sleep quality, because your body's trying so hard to adapt. So if you can try and minimize the amount of time that your body has to get tired from being at altitude before you have to race at altitude, go for it.
There it is. Another dose of expertise from Matt. What's your email again? You can just go to the website.
It's going to be in the show notes.
SatelliteCoaching.com. So that I did. I landed at 6 p.m., 6:30 p.m., I think exactly.
Yep.
And then the following morning at 9:30 in the morning, I'm ripping 6x2K.
And no no small degree of stress in the couple hours before you got to my house either. Oh, the rental car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Matt can't get through a trip without at least 3 snafus.
It's funny how people often ask me, like, how do you do the travel with all the work? And I'm like, I don't do it very well. I do it very poorly, actually. I'm losing stuff. I'm forgetting credit cards.
Dude, you've lost. Okay, so since we've been here, Matt has lost his SD card inside his computer keyboard. He's lost his phone charger inside his clothes. And he's lost his phone and his AirPods inside my car.
That's in 3 days.
And that's in 3 days. And each of those, you're like, I don't know where the fuck it went. Like, where could it be? I didn't move it at all.
And then it's right there where it was.
It's exactly right there. Oh, boy.
Anyways, I think at this point, my body's so used to that type of stress that now it's just...
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm just training perfectly fine.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's... I know some people who've been in, like, very sort of stressful academic environments in either high school or college, where they just constantly have lots of schoolwork to do and they're just getting shit sleep. But if that's what you're used to, you can actually run just totally fine. Like my younger brother, he's 18 years old, still in high school. He's running, he ran 1550 in cross as a 17-year-old. And he gets about 5.5 hours of sleep a night. He's doing all the AP classes and bullshit that American high schoolers do, trying to be competitive to get into college. He's running fine. And one of my good friends and housemates, Steve Jones, he was an 8:33 steeplechaser in the NCAA, also getting about 5.5-6 hours of sleep a night. And if your body's used to it, it can handle it. Now, I'm not saying I recommend that, but yeah, there's definitely something to what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. So the 8x2K, you were down there. So I'm going to let you, your first workout, you joined me obviously as coach, advisor coach person. You saw, I was with Rudy, Tyler. I'm not going to do the recap. You can do it. What do you see?
It looked really good. I think that I was initially a little bit less apprehensive of the whole idea than you were. You were stoked to do it, but you were like, oh, does this fit in with what we had on the docket for this week? And I was like, totally. I think that part of the training benefits coming to altitude is you get some hard efforts in, you force the blood to adapt a little bit. We were having a conversation when you first got here in the context of this workout. And I was like, I think that you can get more adaptation out of a small sim to altitude by training hard while you're there than by just sitting around on the couch. Not that you were going to sit around on the couch, but it's if you can really get the lactate pumping and you can really get the heart, if you can really get the lactate flowing and get the heart rate pumping, it's going to force the body to make more adaptations than it would if you're sitting on the couch. Yes, it still takes more oxygen to sit on the couch at altitude than it does to sit on the couch at sea level. But the delta between that and baseline is way greater when you're actually working really hard, right? Throwing some hard work in, get the blood, clean the blood, as Morgan Pearson likes to say, I think was always a good idea. And yeah, I got down there. You guys had already done 4 or 5 reps. I was just in the middle of, I just rode out from Boulder over to Niwot, first half hour of my 3-hour ride, stopped, took some film. Yeah, filmed a bit. Shout out to Matt Sharp of the Tempo News, who was also there working out. He looked really good, didn't he?
He flew past us at one point. We were going 320 per day.
Oh yeah, he was running 305, 310K. And he was, yeah, Matt Sharp has run, I think he's run 69 minutes off the bike.
Oh wow.
Yeah, no, he's super legit runner. Canadian Olympian. Yeah, we had a nice squad at the track. Yeah, obviously Rudy was the focus of this session and Rudy's really fit right now. He came off of, he had a bit of bad luck at the first T100 race in Miami. I think he told me he was just feeling pretty fatigued. Had some big sort of days at a couple camps and some big travel days leading into that race. But this guy's one of the best long distance triathletes in the world and long course triathletes in the world. And he's just absolutely crushing it. But I think you guys all looked pretty smooth. I think the only one who didn't look super smooth was Tyler, but that's because Tyler doesn't really look that smooth. It's not because Tyler was suffering. He did have to have his music though.
Yeah. Tyler. Yeah. He definitely doesn't appear to want to run without music. So he was running with one ear pod in the whole time with his phone in his hand, basically changing songs like in the middle of the rep sometimes.
I love that.
He's so funny, Tyler. He's so funny. I love hanging out with that guy.
Yeah. The workout looked really good. It was just very relaxed. You guys were on not a ton of rest. What was it? 60 seconds?
So Rudy did 8x2K. And as we're warming up, he said he wanted to start at about 325 per K, which is about 530 mile, maybe 528 per mile.
Yep.
And then he wanted to pretty quickly after the second or third rep, lock into around 320 a K, 520 yep. a mile. And so I thought, perfect. That's probably about where my threshold would lie at altitude. But then again, I also decided to do the workout with my trainers on. Don't ask me why. Just felt the Els Fatorin 5, which I've been using that I've
You just felt comfy in them, right?
I feel comfortable and they're light. They're comfortable. I like them. So I wore them. They're not super shoes. They have no drop. Yeah. They're nothing. So I thought, 320s, that might be a little bit too hard, but I'll just see how I go.
Just to shed some light, yeah. I was going to say, this is the T100 format of triathlon ends with an 18K run, and that 320 pace is about what Rudy's going to run for that. If we take the first couple races, Miami and then Singapore coming up, humidity is going to be a big deal with both of them, as it was in it will be a big deal in Singapore as it was in Miami, but terrible race conditions aside, that's about what Rudy would run for that 18K. Off the bike.
I was thinking to myself, if it feels too hard after the first one, I'm going to maybe do 800 on, drop out for a lap. So it's 5 laps. 2K is 5 laps.
Yep.
On track, for those that don't know. I was going to maybe think about doing 800 on, drop out, 800 on, his recovery, 800 on. But I did the first one and I felt fine. I think we ran 6:45, which is a little bit quicker than he wanted, slightly. So it's 322 per K. And then we locked in. And then I just basically did it to feel and did 6 of them at 320s. At the altitude with the Ultra Torrens. And yeah, I mean, I told you, I did tell you at the time that I could do 10 of them.
Yeah. And that's exactly where we want to be. I mean, I think that we've talked a lot about how very few workouts need to leave you absolutely just in the well with nothing left to give. And, you know, a lot of the time, especially with the really high-end stuff, actually, you can give a little bit more. But with the... there's generally a lot less volume involved with those types of sessions. You're doing max 4K of work instead of at max 16, 20K of work. And yeah, so it's okay to spend yourself a little bit more on that 4K. But with these sort of more aerobic-based sessions, I think that there's very rarely a time when it makes sense to try and end the session on empty. And I think that the philosophy of we're going into the session and we're going through the session with the idea that I can do more when I'm done. I have more left to give. I have something on the table that I didn't touch. I think it's fantastic. I think it's exactly where we need to be.
It was really good actually having you at the track there, because like you even said to me after the sixth, you said, in my eyes, speaking from you, you were like, you could do eight. Do you? And you were like, leave the option open.
I really didn't think it was a big deal. Yeah.
And I think, and that's because you could tell in the sixth one, I was still very much under control. You were sitting at the finish line.
Just talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you were like, if you feel good, keep going. And I made a judgment call to just go 14, 15 hours into altitude. I'm still coming off for the race. So I'm still probably not really completely fully recovered from like sleeping well. And I just went, you know what? This is a way better workout than I would have liked to have done. I'm going to call it there. And that attitude has come from you drilling into my head for 2 months about do not push yourself too hard when it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And right now it's okay. I've got like what's important in the next month or two? Nothing. Like we're crafting. We've got a few ideas in mind, which we'll share in the next episode about some races coming up in May, June, July, but it's still March. So if I've nailed 6x2K faster than I would have liked in heavy shoes at altitude, why push it?
The other thing too, another reason why not to push it is because you know, you're still here for another week. Yeah. And there's an opportunity to, you know, we can get more out of the hard sessions that you have left on the docket for your trip if you're not having to dig yourself out of a hole to do them, right? So one of the reasons why sort of a big point for calling it at six and not doing any more is because at that point, we know that you can recover and hit a big session this weekend. Do we want to talk about that session this weekend?
We will. We'll just finish off here. So you did ask me, I didn't answer. The recovery was 90 seconds between the 2Ks. I don't think there's too much more to share about that. Weather was perfect.
Oh, it was fantastic.
And speaking to an earlier episode, and this is the blend that we're trying to find this year, because I'm not trying to be an elite runner. I'm not a pro runner. I'm trying to run 215 to 219. I'm trying to be serious about it, but I also want to have fun with it.
Yeah.
And I was just stoked to be able to train with two legends.
Yeah, exactly.
One good friend in Tyler.
Yeah.
I'd never met Rudy, but I'd obviously watched him compete and I'd heard him on podcasts and I'm like, not starstruck. At the same time, like stoked to be able to do a workout with Rudy.
Yeah. No, I swam with Rudy on Saturday and it was the same thing. So that went a lot less good for me than it did for you.
You have to say the message that he sent me after that swim workout.
Oh, dude. Rudy joined me for the tail end of my swim on Saturday before Matt got here. And Rudy was just doing active recovery. I'm just here for some active recovery. Just swim about 2K. And I was doing some 200s. It was straight 200. So for those who don't know, swimming is about a fourth running. Like a lot of the world records, 50 meters up to about 400 meters, represent running world records, 200 meters up to about 1600 meters. So generally 100 in the pool is about a 400 on the track, 200 in the pool is about an 800, etc. So I was doing 15 200s and I'm still pretty new to swimming. Swimming is definitely the discipline that I have the least experience with. But yeah, I was working pretty hard and it was one of the highest, I saw one of the highest heart rates I've ever seen in the pool, mostly from relatively short rest. But yeah, my heart rate got to 180, 182 actually in the water, which is I think the highest pool heart rate I've ever seen. Generally, you can, even if you have a max heart rate of 200 running, 130, 140 in the pool is working pretty hard. So to see 180, I was just like, holy shit. And Rudy's just chilling, waiting for me at the walls. And I finished my session and I'm about to cool down. He's like, yeah, man, done. And I was like, I'm going to go down the bike, keep recovering. And I was like, fuck. Just so casually kicking my ass. But yeah, Rudy's a phenomenal athlete. Yeah, something, it's definitely, I think one of the big advantages to Boulder is being in this community where there are a lot of people who are like-minded and have similar goals. And the sort of sense of community, there definitely is this idea of sort of Boulder versus everybody. And just simply by being here and being on a shared path and shared passion, there's a unification there that I think people have a sense of kinship with each other. And yeah, just getting so soaking up the experience of those who are more accomplished and learning from them even if it's not anything, yeah, literally just that they say, just watching how they behave in their sessions. Yeah, there's so much to be gained.
Coincidentally, I ran my best marathon time still today, having just filmed like so many athletes in the 4 months leading in Boulder.
Yeah.
Like I was just continuously, like, not training with them, but I was just like,
learning from them.
Learning
yeah.
from amongst, like getting, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
No, it's definitely the osmosis is definitely real.
That's the word. So what's coming up this weekend? We had in mind a couple of workouts until we got discussing with a colleague, Keith. So we decided actually that on Sunday, so just recapping, it's all at Strava if you want to see it in some sort of chronological order. On Sunday last week was the Shamrock Shuffle. The Wednesday was the 6x2K. Recording this on the Friday, but then on the Sunday in 2 days, we're going to do a test, a Moxie test. So for those, I'm actually not super familiar, obviously,
yeah.
Keith's instructions, but you can speak to that a bit.
Keith, this is Keith Muller of Higher Ground Athletics. He is a strength coach in Boulder, works with a lot of runners, triathletes. I've never actually worked with him, but I've had some conversations with him. Definitely someone I might work with in the future. He had explained to me previously this idea of this MOXIE or muscle oxygen test and method of training or testing. It can really be whatever we think. Sorry, not whatever we think. It can really be whatever you want it to be. And it's a method of intensity control and assessing effort and output. And what it looks at is concentration, is oxygen concentration in the blood as compared to lactate, heart rate, power output, ventilatory output, RPE, any of these other metrics that we have for quantifying effort. So what we're looking at is oxygen concentration in the blood. And what Keith explained to me is we have a lot of these markers that, and among them are pace, heart rate, and power, that are proxies for the physiological things that we actually want to move and that we actually want to target. And those things are generally lactate and oxygen concentration in, not necessarily in the blood actually, but in the muscle. That's what's different about this. And I'm sure if Keith were listening to this, I'd be butchering this a little bit. But the idea is that it's a different method of assessing intensity and assessing fitness. And in Keith's belief, I think it gets a little bit closer at, on a physiological level, what are we actually trying to, what is the goal of training? Keith thinks that muscle oxygenation is one of those big things that we're trying to move. And that all of those proxy metrics, like even pace, power, and heart rate, are stand-ins for the thing that we're actually trying to adapt to, which is we're trying to, I actually don't even know if it's less or more oxygen.
We will find out next week.
Oh, not next week. We'll find out on the podcast. We'll find out next week. You and I will find out in a couple of days. But yeah, so from what I understand, he's going to perform a test that roughly resembles either a VO2 max test or a lactate threshold test, where there's going to be many steps on a treadmill and you basically go until failure. And he'll hook you up to the system, test all the numbers that come in, and then the three of us will have a conversation about what that means for your fitness. But yeah, I think that for anyone who lives in Boulder, is thinking about coming to Boulder, who's looking for a strength coach, I think Keith's a fantastic option. Not in addition to just being a strength coach, I think Keith really sees himself as someone who he really wants to be on the sort of forefront of innovation with how we train in sport. In his, you know, so far strength is his chosen realm, but I think he wants to expand past that. And his interest in the MOXIE system and the MOXIE testing is a side passion for him that he wants to, you know, I think integrate as a product that he can offer for athletes as a coach and as a physiologist in the future. But I think, yeah, both of us are really stoked to just see this process at work and see this method at work and try and learn from it.
Yeah. Looking forward to sharing insights into that next week on the episode, because we would have had, I'm not sure if we're going to have all of the information at that point, but we'll see. But at least we can reflect on what actually happened in the test and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the last thing, two more quick things before we finish up. We've only got a few more minutes. The first thing is I've started doing a little bit of gym, of which I actually haven't spoken to you in detail about it.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of workouts. I'll talk in the next few episodes about exactly what I'm doing there. But the two gym workouts I've done so far have just been very simple things. So some squats, some leg press, some hamstring curls, some calf raises at like medium level weight, three sets of 10. And I do that because I've learned, the people listening would have also learned the hard way. Going straight into gym by lifting even remotely heavy for you, you just can't move for 3 days. So yeah. I actually did my first gym session 3 days before the Shamrock Shuffle, of which I actually still felt it in the Shamrock Shuffle.
One of the things that I want to ask Keith, and strength coaching is, or strength training is something that I just completely do not know that much about, you know, probably more than the average person, but
a lot more than the average person.
Okay. Yeah.
Doing yourself,
but still relative to what I feel really confident about, which is the more run focused training. It's not really something I consider my area of expertise, but one of the things that I really want to ask Keith when we chat with him and we sit down for this test, we'll sit down, I'll be sitting down, you'll be working pretty hard on the treadmill, you'll be suffering, I'll be on my phone.
By the sounds of Keith, by reading Keith's messages, I will be really suffering.
Oh, you will be 100% suffering.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll be feeling, if you didn't feel the altitude in your lungs at the 6x2K, you'll be feeling it. Yeah. But I'll have the throw up bucket ready. But I want to talk to Keith about where gym session. I've never really been certain about where gym sessions should lie inside a training week.
Same here.
And I think there are pros and cons to where you throw it in. And from my understanding, it depends on what you want to do with that strength training. Is the goal of strength training to build a lot of raw strength, or is it to turn muscle systems on for the assistance of running? Make sure that sort of things are activated and firing in the right way? Or is it to actually make changes to your musculature? And I think that depending on what your intent is, it changes where you want to put it in the week. And it's, do you put it on the same day as intensity? Is it before or after the run? Is it the day after intensity? Is it the day before intensity? Is it before or after the run on those days, right? How close can you do it to a big session, right? These are questions that I think that both you and I want to get Keith's take on.
Yep.
And we'll definitely share them with the listeners next week.
I think I know Keith's answer, but I'm not going to say it here, but we will wait to hear from Keith.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, that rounds up another episode of Training Talk. Well, I feel like we've got plenty more to share next week, especially from this test, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, we got a couple more things to share next week about...
There is actually one note on our sheet here that I decided mid-recording that we're going to share next week. It's about a new brand...
Partnership.
A new partnership that you have been working with for a while.
Yep.
You've introduced me to this week, and it's...
It's very, very cool. I think that, you
we're
know...
We're doing a massive tease here. We're not going to say what it is, but go on.
This trip in Boulder is big networking. Matt and I are shooting the shit. We're getting some training done. Well, actually, I'm currently a little injured, a little banged up with calf issues. So we're actually not running together, which is a bummer. But one of the things that we're getting out of this trip is just some great networking with individuals and brands that we want to be involved with for the rest of this year and beyond. And both Matt and I have some connections that we're bringing to the table. But this brand in particular... If you've been following along with Matt's Strava.
I just realized that you can already see it on my Strava. So.
Well.
I posted it this morning.
At least this is encouraging people to go check out your Strava if they haven't already. Yeah. Okay. So the brand's on Strava. But we're still not going to say it. We're going to leave it for next week. But by next week, you'll have a little bit better sense of how it's working as well. But why don't you just say really quick, what's your sort of one or two sentence summary of how excited you are about this brand and what you think about how the brand could change performance in our space?
I thought the brand was focused on a metric that I couldn't correlate to. But then when I looked at what they're currently doing and what they're about to do,
it's nuts.
Almost replaces a lot of what the world's done.
It's nuts.
And then a lot more.
It's going to change. I think it's really going to revolutionize run training.
We've really pumped this up.
We really have. But
By the looks of what they were doing, it's very interesting. And I think another thing, linking Nathan Daly into this conversation, our physiotherapist, he is going to find this very interesting.
Yeah.
There we go. Good at that.
That does it.
Thanks for listening in, guys. We'll see you next week.